welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Shiva Kumar PR. He's the founder and CEO of Maven Silicon. He's responsible for the company's vision, overall strategy, business, and technology. He's also the founder and CEO of ASIC Design Technologies. Welcome to the podcast, Shiva.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to speak to you again. We did a CEO interview last year, but today I wanted to talk about the article, SoC Verification Flows and Methodologies, you recently published on SemiWiki, which has received a lot of attention. So let me ask, why did you choose this specific topic?
Once again, thanks for this great opportunity, Daniel. I'm so delighted to interact with you and share my thoughts with the verification engineers community. Well, the question is, why did I choose this topic? In my view, currently everything is going through transformation. For example, if you look at the product company Apple, Apple is taking smartphones approach to make even laptops. That's something very new to us. For example, you look at MacBook. They are using chips, M1 series or M2 series. These chips are pretty complex. For example, M1 chip. M1 chip has various components like CPUs, GPUs. It has 16-core neural engine, image signal processor, PCI Express storage controller. In addition to all the things, it has got USB 4 controller that includes Thunderbolt 3 or 4. But the beauty is actually Apple is using a RISC processor for making even laptop. And if you look at this M1 chip, there is a subsystem. It's composed of CPU, GPU, and 16-core neural engine. This particular subsystem is very similar to A14 chip. Considering this replication, what I would say, Apple is taking smartphones approach to make even laptops. Similarly, Esperanto is using RISC-V processor for their AI accelerators. So everyone is trying to use RISC processor, but if you look at it has always been like using CISC primarily for the complex electronic devices like laptops and cloud servers. This is something new to us. So basically, we need new approaches to redesign the product. And this demands us to create more and more complex SoCs. So we are in a situation to create more SoCs. I would say our life is going to be busy of creating new SoCs. If you want to design high quality SoC, basically we need to take care of verification. So designing such complex SoCs demands a standard and proven verification flow that involves extensive verification at every level. Extensive verification at every level. I would say IP, subsystem, or chip level. Also, this kind of verification flow demands various kinds of technologies, not only methodologies, different kinds of technologies. We might need formal verification to verify IP. We might prefer simulation to verify subsystem. But when it comes to verifying the chip, we might go for either simulation or emulation. Also, there may be other options like ASIC prototyping. So I chose this topic basically to explain the next generation of engineers that verification is also going to be different. We verification engineers will have to collaborate with chip architects to drive the verification process. Because we are looking at like how to redesign the chip. Instead of using CISC, can we use RISC, reduced instruction set computer, even to realize components or devices like laptops?
That's interesting. I agree. Apple has just done some amazing things. But let's talk about verification engineers specifically. So why do verification engineers need to understand electronic systems, and how does that help in their long-term career goals?
It's a good question, Daniel. See, the main job of verification engineers is to find bugs in the chip. But the challenge is, how are they going to communicate the design issues to the stakeholders? The stakeholders could be design engineers, sometimes engineering managers, and sometimes they could be their customers or internal customers like software engineering teams. So if they want to communicate the design issues to the stakeholders, basically they need to be aware of the design process. Moving forward, I don't think that they would be able to approach verification, especially at the chip level, something like black box verification. Of course, they are going to do pretty much black box verification because SOC involves pre-verified IPs. But to approach the verification process, they need to be aware of the system design process. For example, they need to know how basically we build smartphone if they are going to verify mobile chips. How do we build smartphone? Just look at this. Smartphone needs both hardware and software. When it comes to hardware, basically we use system on a chip. This SoC integrates almost all the components needed for smartphone. The components could be different kinds of IPs like processors, CPUs, primarily RISC, reduced instruction set computer, and GPUs. Apart from CPUs and GPUs, we may need application processors, digital signal processor, and there will be subsystems like wireless components, Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. There may be analog components. There may be memory controllers. There may be on-chip memory. And there may be different kinds of interface IPs, USB, SPI, UART, I2C. So we integrate all the IPs using on-chip bus like AMBA. They may use their own on-chip bus also. This is how we try to realize the hardware. So the hardware is going to have a central component called SoC, system on a chip. In addition to hardware, there will be software. If you look at the software, it has two main components. One is application software, the other one is system software. System software is composed of various things like firmware, protocol stack, primarily operating system. Operating system is the central component of system software. Basically, operating system provides the interface to the application software so that the application software can deal with the hardware. If the application software has to interface with the hardware, basically, we need to provide all kinds of device drivers or firmware. Sometimes it could be like protocol stack, even for the subsystems like Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. Then how it works? Yes, it has hardware, it has software. When I say application software, in case of smartphone, the application software would be pretty much mobile apps. There would be different kinds of apps like Google Map, Calculator, YouTube, Facebook. They are all part of application software. We prefer higher level language like Java or C++ to create all these mobile apps. So you have smartphone. When you click on a particular mobile app, what happens? For example, you click on calculator. The operating system loads the equivalent binary into RAM, random access memory. What is this binary? This binary is nothing but the machine language for the target processor. In this case, it could be ARM or RISC-V. What is this machine language? See, whatever the application we create using higher level language, it will be compiled into processor instruction. There is a compiler. the processor can understand only processor instructions. So everything has to be executed in terms of processor instructions. So the application will be converted into processor instruction, and then using assembler, we convert this processor instruction into binary. Eventually, the execution happens in terms of binary. If you want to understand this transformation process, basically you need to have better understanding of ISA, instruction set architecture. That's what I'm trying to emphasize. You might be dealing with IP verification or subsystem verification or SOC verification, but you need to be familiar with this kind of process. To understand this kind of process, basically you need to be familiar with the processor. So I expect every engineer to be familiar with the processor. How basically we use ISA, instruction set architecture, to deal with all these things. Now let's come back to this. So you click on a particular app, then the operating system loads the equivalent binary. This binary is nothing but machine language. It loads the binary into RAM. At the same time, the operating system loads the starting address of this binary into program counter. That is a register called program counter. And the processor is going to use this address to fetch the instruction sequentially from RAM. And that's how the processor is going to calculate the values. You say 2 plus 3, basically the processor is going to use the instruction add, and it's going to add the values, and that's how it's going to produce the values back. Though I say everything is going to happen from RAM, in reality, actually, the interaction is going to happen through various levels of memory. For that, you need to understand more about the processor. The processor is going to fetch all the instructions through cache. There would be different levels of cache, like L1 cache, L2 cache. If the processor doesn't find anything in cache, then only it's going to fetch the instruction from RAM. That's how basically we try to increase the performance. But if you ask me, like, how the smartphone works, this is how the smartphone works. And this kind of understanding is highly needed for the verification engineers.
Yeah, I can understand that. That's very detailed. Thank you. So can you walk me through the SOC verification flow, starting with IP level verification?
See, IPs are the fundamental building blocks of any SOC. So we need to make sure that there are no issues or bugs in any IP. And we might need to opt for methodologies like formal verification that demand exhaustive verification. So we would be looking at something like 100% coverage. When I say coverage, primarily functional coverage. How can I make sure that the IP is verified thoroughly? So we prefer exhaustive verification. We can also achieve the same thing through simulation. When it comes to simulation, we might prefer exhaustive random simulation, not directed test case. It used to be like using directed test case to verify the blocks, but no more directed test cases. Why random test cases? Because it helps us to find bugs faster. I'm not interested in following a particular sequence when it comes to verifying my IP. I want to do things randomly so that I would be able to hit the bug as quick as possible. Time is critical, right? At the same time, we would be looking at like how to generate different kinds of coverage information. Can I generate coverage from assertion? And can I generate coverage from coverage models? That's called functional coverage, primarily from stimulus. Can I have other kinds of coverages like code coverage? And then finally, I'm going to look at like how to merge all these kinds of coverages. And then if I'm going to be convinced like this is really good, I feel confident that I can release my IP for synthesis. So that's how basically we look at IP verification. One thing that's very important for verification engineers, if you really want to be good at IP level verification, basically you need to be good at programming. You need to develop your programming expertise. At the same time, you need to be good at using EDA tools. You need to always think like how best you can automate the simulation process. So when it comes to programming expertise, obviously you have to be more creative, right? How are you going to verify a particular IP? Here, I would like to give one small example. When we wanted to develop verification IP for our Bluetooth, so basically we wanted to offer verification IP for Bluetooth low energy. If you look at Bluetooth low energy protocol stack, there are different layers like application layers and then host. And there is an interface called host controller interface below which controller. This controller is composed of link layer and then PHY. We wanted to provide verification IP for link layer. Okay, only for link layer. If someone is going to create RTL for link layer, basically we wanted to provide verification IP. But how we approached, this is something very important. If you look at this protocol stack, it explains all kinds of layers. So what we did, we created a test bench to mimic host. We approached like this. So the test bench is going to be like host. And then we created functional model for link layer, so that you would be able to create different kinds like transmitter and receiver. You can configure the functional model, either transmitter or receiver, and you can think of doing even back-to-back verification also. So the test bench acts like host, and then the test bench is going to configure the functional model. And how the test bench is going to interact with the functional model, that's where we looked at HCI. This interface, HCI, is good. It's defined by the specification. So we didn't want to go with any other interface like SPI or UART. If you look at the RTL, customers will always use the standard interface like SPI or UART because nobody is going to use TLM. But when it comes to verification, you don't really need to deal with pin level interface. You can think of using TLM. So why don't you model HCI directly into TLM? And that's good for the customer, right? Also, we didn't have the access to RTL because we were developing verification IP. So the big challenge for us was like, how are we going to find bugs in our VIP? Because my VIP should be clean. I can't release my VIP with all kinds of bugs. So how I am going to verify my VIP? That's where I thought like, okay, it's better to create two different teams. One is going to create reference model. The other team is going to create predictor logic primarily for the scoreboard. And these two teams, they are going to deal with the specification and they will have their own interpretation. And that would be really good for us to find bugs. Because if you look at the test bench, the predictor logic is going to be different because it's developed by a different team. And then the functional model is developed by another team, and we wanted to deal with this mismatch, like how these people interpreted the specification, right? So this kind of strategy is also important when it comes to IP verification.
Interesting. But what about subsystem level verification? How does that differ from IP level verification?
Generally, we might prefer gray box verification. When I say gray box verification, basically, it's the mix of white box and black box, because any subsystem you look at, it's composed of some pre-verified IPs and some new IPs. So before creating SOC, if you look at the system, basically, it's going to have on-chip bus. And this on-chip bus will connect all kinds of interfaces, and there may be in-house components like system controllers. And sometimes if you have access to other subsystems like Bluetooth, then you can think of integrating Bluetooth also. Or if you are using standard off-the-shelf cores like ARM processor, then you can think of using even ARM RTL or functional model, right? So partially you can build the system. So when I say subsystem, basically it's going to have almost all kinds of interface IPs and some necessary subsystems. Here, what's our interest? We want to make sure that whether we have connected all the IPs properly through on-chip bus, how the bus is going to behave and what is the performance. We want to measure the performance of the bus. If this kind of subsystem works beautifully, then my confidence will be very high. I would be able to convert this subsystem into SoC by connecting other components like GPUs and necessary processors and memory controllers, whatever needed. This is how we approach subsystem verification. When it comes to subsystem verification, our job is going to be more of using verification IPs because it's going to have mostly standard interfaces. Just think about it. For any SoCs, obviously you need standard interface IPs like SPI, UART, I2C, and USB. Definitely there would be GPIOs. Then we might prefer standard verification IPs primarily from the EDA companies. So we would be connecting all these VIPs with the external interface IPs, and then we will try to drive stimulus, and then we would look at like how the data flow is going to happen. On top of it, we would be looking at how to measure the performance of the on-chip bus. That's how basically we approach a subsystem verification.
Oh, got it. So how do you recommend we approach SoC verification? You know, for example, reuse. Do we reuse everything for an SoC verification? Is it simple and scalable from IP to SoC in UVM? Can you share your thoughts on that?
It's a good question, Daniel. Everyone believes in using standard frameworks like UVM. UVM is there. UVM is pretty popular when it comes to verifying IPs. But system level verification is completely different. It's not going to be simple and straightforward as we imagine, because in reality, we have to deal with different kinds of IPs. I'm talking about verification, so verification IPs. We will have access to standard verification IPs. At the same time, there may be legacy test benches. So when it comes to SoC verification, mostly the verification environment is going to be hybrid. It's going to be composed of different kinds of test bench components. Some of them could be standard verification IPs. Some of them could be legacy HDL-based test benches. Or in some cases, it might be based on C or C++ also. So we can't simply throw them away. That's where the engineer needs to look at like how I'm going to customize my verification environment. If you get all the lower level components in UVM, and at the top level, if you are planning to use UVM, it's going to be straightforward. You can reuse everything as you prefer, but it's not going to be the case. So definitely we need to look at like how to convert the legacy test bench components into UVM based test bench components, but that's going to be more of like writing some kind of wrappers. And when you look at system level verification, what I would say is everything is going to happen through processor. Processor is the one which is going to configure the chip. Processor is the one which is going to initiate all kinds of operations. So we always try to reuse the firmware test cases to initiate all kinds of operations. So what we do, we actually prefer the simulation model for the processor because the RTL is going to be slow. If the processor is well proven, it's a pre-verified IP. So instead of using encrypted netlist or RTL, I would prefer simulation model. So I'm going to replace the processor RTL by simulation model. But if I want to have complete verification environment in UVM at the top level, then I have to think of creating some kind of UVM agent, which is going to instantiate some kind of memory. Look at this. The processor is going to fetch the binary machine language from the memory. Right, so you can model memory in Verilog. It's simple array. So whatever the firmware test case you get, you can compile it into machine language, and then you can load that object code into memory, and the processor is going to read the binary, and then the processor is going to initiate the operation. Just think about it. The SOC is complex. Then you might want to look at like how I am going to verify different scenarios using directed test cases. In this case, we don't prefer random simulation because the chip itself is very complex. And the chip is composed of pre-verified IPs. That's the most important thing. So we don't really need to go with exhaustive simulation using random test cases. It doesn't mean that the simulation is going to be simple with few directed test cases. Obviously, there will be hundreds of test cases at the chip level. But it's going to be more of like directed test case approach. If I'm going to get some data through USB interface, and then eventually how this data will be loaded into the on-chip memory. So for that, basically, we need to create some kind of firmware test case. And before running simulation, the processor is going to configure these two IPs, USB and then memory, how the USB is going to be. There could be different modes, right? If you consider USB, host or device or hub. So the processor has to configure whether it is going to be host or device or hub, and then how it is going to receive the data and how it is going to communicate with the memory. So the processor has to configure the chip, and then the processor is going to initiate the operation. That's what the processor is going to do. But we need to drive the stimulus. If you want to send data through USB, then basically we need to send packet through USB, and that will be taken care through UBM component, in this case, verification IP. So we will use verification IP for USB interface, and we will use the verification IP for the memory or memory controller, and then the processor is going to initiate the operation. Basically, that's how we are going to generate a particular scenario. This is how the SOC level verification happens. The simulation is not the only option. Mostly, we prefer emulation because the speed is very slow when it comes to simulation. That's where we look at hardware solutions like emulation.
Yeah, very well explained. One final question, Shiva. Can you explain quickly PSS?
PSS, Portable Test Stimulus Standard. So basically, we can define test scenarios in PSS. So PSS gives us higher level of abstraction to define the test scenarios. Think about the SOC verification flow. You would be dealing with IP level verification. You would be dealing with subsystem level verification. And you would be dealing with a chip level verification. Here, the big question is, how are we going to use IP level test bench components at the chip level? Look at processor verification. Processor is an IP. So I might prefer formal verification because processor is going to be the central component of the chip. Then I want to make sure that the processor is perfect. I want to make sure that it is bug free. So I might opt for formal verification methodology. So in this case, I would be writing assertions, and then the EDA tool is going to do exhaustive verification. And that's how basically I verify the processor. If I want to reuse the assertions at the chip level, I might need UVM test cases instead of assertions. So I can think of defining the assertions or the test scenarios, primarily the test scenarios in PSS for my processor verification. And the EDA tool is going to use PSS to generate assertions at the IP level. So I'm not going to write assertions. I'm going to define the test scenarios in PSS, and then the EDA tool is going to generate all the assertions needed for my formal verification. And I will use the same test scenario in PSS at the chip level, but when it comes to chip level, instead of preferring assertions, I might prefer UVM test cases. So the EDA tool, in this case, it's going to generate UVM test cases. So I would be able to reuse all my IP level test cases at the chip level. This is how I can think of using PSS. why this is highly required. We prefer different kinds of technologies for different kinds of verification. Look at this. We prefer formal verification technology for IP level. We might prefer simulation or emulation when it comes to chip level, right? So it's not going to be the same, like we would be dealing with only simulation for everything, whether it is IP level or subsystem level or chip level. There would be different technologies like formal verification or simulation or emulation or ASIC prototyping. So we don't want to rewrite the test cases every time if the technology is going to be different, if the methodology is going to be different. Or sometimes we might prefer different languages also. Instead of system Verilog, I might prefer system C or C. So that's taken care by PSS. With PSS, what I would say is the future is going to be different. It has always been like rerunning the test cases and managing the regressions. That's how the life has been for verification engineers. But the future is going to be different, because we would be looking at creating new chips. How Apple is trying. Apple is trying to use a RISC instead of CISC for creating laptops. So the chips are going to be new. The approach is going to be new. So verification will also demand new approaches. We verification engineers will have to collaborate with the chip architects to drive the verification process rather than managing the regression testing.
Very well explained. Thank you for your time, Shiva, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Nice talking to you, Daniel. Thanks for this opportunity. Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.